We just want to party. I'm just for you. We just want to party. I'm just for you.
Listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
Do you enjoy the arts, have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members and get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bella Jansons of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Victor Matthew and Matthew Hagg in the New York Times reports that Amtrak train service on the line between New York City and Albany remained disrupted for a second day with structural issues in a parking Manhattan garage halting the trains. Amtrak service between Pennsylvania Station in New York and the Croton Harmon Station in Westchester County was stopped because of problems with the garage. Amtrak says it does not know when the building owner will fix the problems, so it is unknown when normal train service will resume. Metro North trains are still running between Grand Central Terminal and Croton Harmon, and Amtrak tickets are being honored on that line. Read more about this story in the New York Times. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the first local cannabis stores have finally opened after the state legalized the drug more than 2.5 years ago. But the two stores in Hudson are only temporary pop-up shops operating only until the end of the year. Gotham Dispensary's pop-up store is on Front Street, and Legacy Dispensaries are selling cannabis on Union Street. In October, New York officials opened up licensing for temporary pop-up shops to sell some of the cannabis that has been piling up with few stores officially open. So far, the only other official cannabis stores open nearby are in Albany and Rensselaer County. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Kathleen Moore reports in the Times Union that a Blue Ribbon Commission told the Board of Regents its recommendation on how to change high school graduation requirements on November 13th. The commission wants students to have more ways to graduate from high school besides passing Regents exams. The state has been giving Regents exams for 145 years, but they were not required until the mid-90s, and now all students have to pass 5 Regents exams to graduate. In recent years, students have been allowed to substitute the 5th Regents exam with a career in technical education program or a project in arts or civics. But New York is one of only 7 states in the country requiring passage of similar exams to graduate. the commission recommended no longer requiring specific courses, including algebra, and instead said students should be able to show competency in some STEM topics, which include science, technology, engineering, and math, and that students should be able to graduate early if they show competency. Commission member Segrario Rudescindio O'Neill said, and I quote, "The commission placed a great deal of interest in increasing student flexibility. This would provide students with more opportunities to meet graduation requirements, increase the number of elective courses that may be used to fulfill credit requirements," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 14th. Local early morning temperatures range from 32 degrees in Steventown and Voorheesville to 38 in Medusa. Regional average soil temperature is 43 degrees. Wrap up if you're heading outside today and don't forget a hat, it will be windy. Mostly cloudy and we see a high of 45 at 11 a.m. That temperature lingers most of the day. Overnight, temps dip to 27 frigid degrees. Tomorrow, winds stick around but calm down a bit and we see a high of 50 at 2 p.m. Overnight, it dips to 32 degrees, then hits 57 late in the afternoon on Thursday. Friday hits 60, keeping the coming precip solidly in the rain bracket for Friday afternoon. Sunset today will be at 4:23 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:41 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances remain at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 414 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently bad till dark, then okay below 8 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 85. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting un-American behavior is 1 year in prison or $10,000 fine or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under Edict Number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, buddy. All right.
Food segment on WGXC, where I investigate food places and tell you all about my discoveries. I was in a dark anti-interpretive mood when I decided to check out the Yellow Deli at 18 South River Street in Coxsackie. Despite my debilitating anxiety and lack of appetite, I crawled into my Toyota Matrix and drove up New York State Route 385. I was put at ease when I arrived in Coxsackie's Reed Street Historic District, a quaint commercial enclave of neighborhood shops and uncomplicated street parking. I spotted the Yellow Deli at the foot of Riverside Park, the Coxsackie Boat Launch, and the Hudson River beyond. I'm in Coxsackie, outside of the Yellow Deli, which is yellow. The Yellow Deli is located on the ground level of a historic mid-19th century commercial building. There are yellow curtains in the window. A chalkboard facing the street said potato soup and blueberry muffin in the Yellow Deli's signature style, which is on a continuum that includes Haight-Ashbury-style typography, forest fungi, basket lamps, rocking chairs, and animals playing instruments. It was lunchtime on a clear, chilly day. I sat at a table with a view of the open kitchen next to some retail cases of granola, yerba mate, and honey. I just feel really safe here.
Across from my table, there was a wood stove and a window display of free informational pamphlets that had the title A Brand New Culture and Are You Ready for What's Coming? Under the ceiling, the walls are painted with images of people plowing and doing other forms of ancient farm labor, either in the Hudson Valley or someplace that looks just like it. Next to a rocking chair and a section of exposed brick, and across from a nook of upcycled wood booths and a mural of woodland creatures resting near a utopian lake, there was a wooden sign hanging on display. It had two sheep painted on it. Each sheep is standing on two legs like a human, with their arms on each other's shoulders. Above the sheep's heads, it reads, "We love you." The workers, who refer to themselves as worker bees, a fact that I gleaned from a sign in the bathroom and from one of the free pamphlets, seemed to be sharing responsibilities in the kitchen, which reminded me of a camp dining hall, and in the dining room, which reminded me of a cabin. I overheard some calls coming in for smoothies to go. Their yellow paper menu is hand-drawn. Their menu items are interspersed with cartoon images of flowers, rolling pins, coffee mugs with steam coming out, pancakes with butter on top, and the sheep from before. It was lunchtime, so I focused in on the create your own sandwich part of the menu.
Turkey on, what is the egg roll like?
It's probably the closest to white bread.
Okay. I'll have it on light rye.
Okay.
I ordered an austere turkey sandwich with sprouts.
Tomato, onion, and sprouts.
Right before I got the sandwich, they notified me that it would be served hot, which I was not expecting.
Everything about the sandwich is totally normal except for how hot it is.
My turkey sandwich arrived. The rye bread was a light deli-style variety.
Rye bread would make a good toast. It's not toasted, though. It's more heated some other way.
And the top and bottom halves were each smeared conservatively with mayonnaise and yellow mustard. Inside, a layer of thinly sliced turkey, onion, tomato, and sprouts, which I would not have added to my sandwich, knowing that the sandwich was hot. It was served with thick and crunchy kettle-style potato chips and a pickle spear. I ate my sandwich quickly and left with some free pamphlets and a feeling that more was to be revealed. So I returned the following Monday with my dining companion.
And then, do you make your own granola?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll get one order of granola.
This time we came for breakfast, which is a substantial portion of the menu.
A cinnamon roll.
We were greeted by the same gentle worker bee who had served me my sandwich.
We'll have to try the muffin as well.
My dining companion and I were seated in the dining room where I had been seated before.
And then we'll try the breakfast sandwich.
Over time, I got wind of the fact that there was some kind of seating area beyond the kitchen that other people knew about.
And Houston Discovery?
There was a whole enclosed back patio dining room that we didn't know existed.
Discovery Houston, we're still looking at it.
So we asked if we could move there and relocated immediately.
Discovery Houston, recommend a vector transfer to the BFS.
The enclosed patio dining room was bright and warm. It had an 180-degree view of the Hudson River and was full of other people having breakfast. We ordered a cinnamon roll, a blueberry muffin, waffles, granola with fruit, a breakfast sandwich with sliced turkey, eggs, and cheese on a roll, and another breakfast sandwich called the Spinwich, with spinach cooked into the eggs.
Warm blueberry muffin with pieces of walnut and blueberries. Crunchy, buttery, with some tart blueberry.
The muffin arrived first. It was neither too big, nor too small, nor too sweet, with a moist, dark brown crumb that indicated the use of non-white flours. It was served warm, with flecks of walnut on top and orbs of real blueberry inside.
The waffle is so crispy and soft.
Next, the waffle arrived. It was in a circle shape and divided into four quarter sections.
Has a crispy crust, but then it's soft and airy in the middle.
With butter and maple syrup melting into its rectangular craters.
And the butter is really salty, which lends a nice contrast to the sweetness of the maple syrup, which I suspect is probably coming from a tree.
Like the muffin, the waffle had a complexity of color and flavor, suggesting the use of whole grain flours. This was also true of the cinnamon roll.
There's definitely like a nutritious aspect to it,
which was light, warm, and bready, with dark coils of cinnamon.
You can see the cinnamon. It doesn't have a frosting on it, which I am a little worried about because I like frosting, but very like gooey, warm. It doesn't need frosting because it's pretty sweet.
I gasped when I saw our bowl of granola. It was elegantly decorated with slices of banana around the entire rim of the bowl.
It's toasted granola, but not dark the way some granola is. Sunflower seeds, sesame seeds.
And had icy blueberries on top. The granola had a sticky, semi-crunchy consistency with sunflower seeds and sesame seeds inside of the large crags it was broken into. Our kind worker bee poured cold milk into the granola bowl tableside.
Not super sweet, seedy, nutty, cold milk.
Lost in an obsessive fixation with the waffle, I had neglected to try the two breakfast sandwiches, which were similar, but not exactly the same.
There's turkey, there's more cheese, and more ketchup.
One had sliced turkey on it. The other had spinach baked into the egg.
A spinach and egg disc.
And tiny diced red bell pepper.
She's using the little pieces of bell pepper. Sculptural tomato and spinach garnish on the side, standing vertically and twisting like a dolphin.
But both were served on soft braided sesame rolls with melted jack cheese and perfectly round discs of egg. So I gathered that the eggs must get cooked in a disc-shaped mold. Boldly, both of the breakfast sandwiches came with ketchup on them.
Savory. I think the ketchup might be... What brand of ketchup do you think it is? I think it's Heinz.
Yeah.
I savored the last few bites of the waffle, muffin, and cinnamon roll, and I looked out over the Hudson River.
And we'll take a check whenever you have a minute. Okay. Thank you so much.
Far out into the distance, I could almost see the shapes of two smiling sheep levitating above the water.
I hope we can be friends,
they whispered. Thank you for listening to this edition of Food Segment on WGXC.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Right now, I oppose this measure. I think it's a mistake. I don't support the rule advancing it. And I think he should switch directions like he did last week with a very good move by putting Israel forward, paid for, out of the IRS expansion.
Texas Republican and House Freedom Caucus leader Chip Roy describes Speaker Mike Johnson's stopgap budget as too much like business as usual. Johnson's laddered continuing resolution would fund some agencies at current levels until January 19th and others until February 2nd. Congress has until Friday to avert a government shutdown. Johnson's CR has some support among Democrats, but others are calling it a gimmick, likely to lead to more problems later. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he's pleased the CR avoids the steep cuts demanded by the hard right, though it's still less than ideal. He says bipartisanship is the only way forward.
I've said on multiple occasions that if we're going to work together to keep the government open, Speaker Johnson will have to avoid pushing steep cuts or poison pills that Democrats can't support.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is also calling for bipartisanship, but McConnell praises Johnson's plan, saying it would avoid a shutdown and allow time for a more normal budget writing process.
Regular order requires that Congress provide itself the time for careful consideration and thorough amendment. I'm glad to see that Speaker Johnson has produced a continuing resolution that would do exactly that.
In a national day of action, protests around the country demanded a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Liz Urikan helped organize a group that came to the Arizona State Capitol in part to honor the dead. She says there needs to be greater humanitarian access to Gaza and an end to the blind support of Israel.
They have a special exemption with regard to weapons and military funding, etc. We have to take a look at this, that we are all with blood on our hands as taxpayers.
In Massachusetts, the American Friends Service Committee protested outside of lawmakers' offices. Jennifer Bing with the AFSC's Palestine Activism Program says it's wrong for U.S. tax dollars to buy weapons for Israel.
Our belief is that this war needs to end, and one way of that happening is to stop the flow of weapons to the Middle East.
In Louisiana, as with neighboring states, federal courts have thrown out current election maps for diluting the power of black voters. The legislature there will be called into a special session to draw new districts in time to meet a January 15th deadline set by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Tyrone Walker with the Urban League of Louisiana is eager to see the process get underway.
We hope that we won't delay any further and that we get on to putting fair congressional maps so we can get a second representative that can deliver for African Americans.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. After multiple appeals, Louisiana is getting close to fair congressional maps for the 2024 election, after a November 10th appeals court decision directed the legislature to draw new maps by January 15th. Louisiana's voting age population is 30% African American, yet out of six congressional districts, only one is majority black, in violation of the Voting Rights Act. After the Supreme Court's Milligan decision directing Alabama to draw a second majority black district, democracy groups had hoped for a quick resolution in Louisiana. But it took two more appeals before the Fifth Circuit finally directed new maps be drawn by January 15th by the legislature, or the court would draw the map. A district court has scheduled a hearing to review the map on February 5th. Here's where it gets even more interesting. Governor-elect Jeff Landry takes office on January 8th, and special sessions require a 7-day notice, making the session the same day as the deadline. Landry has already stated he will call that session. Current Governor John Bel Edwards could also call a special session, but has not yet done so. Computer redistricting can be done relatively quickly, and it's likely mapmakers are already at work. Bel Edwards wrote in a statement, "I remain confident that we will have a fair map with two majority black districts before the congressional elections next year." We have more on Louisiana black voters' fight for fair maps at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. With all of the coming holidays that are so food-related, I thought it was time to catch up with our friend Natasha Pernica, Executive Director of the Food Pantries for the Capital District, to hear what's going on in the Capital District for people who might need help during the holidays or for people who might especially want to provide help during the holidays. So, Natasha, welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I mentioned that you're with the Food Pantries for the Capital District. So let's start with just a sort of defining of terms and what's the difference between food pantries of the Capital District and food pantries and regional food bank and whatever other organizations might be involved that I'm not thinking of.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. So if you are a person or a family that's in need of food assistance, you would go to a food pantry. Food pantries are often located in churches or other religious organizations or in human service organizations. And in our coalition of about 70 food pantries here in Albany, Rensselaer, Saratoga, and Schenectady counties, nearly 50% of the pantries are totally volunteer run. The other pantries have usually one staff or a couple staff members to help. And most of the food pantries distribute out to community members they get from the food bank. So the food bank we think of as like the big wholesaler that brings in a lot of food. And then the pantries get their food from the food bank. And then individuals and families go to food pantries to get their food.
So the food from the regional food bank goes directly to the pantries. It doesn't come through food pantries for the Capital District.
So one of the things the food pantries for the Capital District does in support of our member food pantries is we deliver a lot of food from the food bank. So I mentioned that it's a largely volunteer-run group of pantries. And I don't know if you've ever tried to put 1,000 pounds of food in your own vehicle, but it's a lot of food. And so one of our kind of shared services is that we actually pick up food from the food bank. We can move 3,000 to 4,000 pounds of food per pantry in our trucks, and we deliver it right to the pantry's doors so they don't have to send their volunteers over to the food bank.
4,000 pounds, 2 tons of food in one truck?
Well, our trucks actually can carry 12,000 pounds of food, so it would be about 3 or 4 pantries per truck per day, and we have several trucks. So that way the pantries can order a lot more food than they used to have the capacity to order at a particular time. So this year we've already moved 3 million pounds of food from the food bank out to pantries. We're up with delivery about 28%. Compared to last year. Pantry need has been much higher than we've ever seen it. So we're moving a lot more food.
So I know that during the pandemic, there was a lot of concern about access to food because people were out of work, but that hasn't diminished. There's still a higher need, a growing need.
Yes. In fact, when inflation happened last year and then the federal COVID emergency program started rolling back, we actually saw the highest number of people here in the Capital Region ever visiting our coalition. We had nearly 70,000 people last year visit food pantries right here in the Capital Region, 70,000 people. And this year, year to date compared to last year, the service levels at pantries are 15% up.
So that would be the numbers are the individuals, then the service levels count how many times they come in and how much they need.
Yes, yes. And so here in the Capital Region, about 80% of the pantries in our coalition are seeing increases. Some pantries are seeing very large increases of people, or people even having to return multiple times per month. And just some examples. We had an older gentleman who's retired, living off of a very limited income. And when the emergency SNAP allocations ended, he was only getting $28 per month in SNAP or food stamps. And he said, how am I going to make ends meet? And he started going to a food pantry. We're seeing a lot of working people turning to food pantries. I spoke with a woman who was an administrative assistant whose husband also works, and they have children. And she said, we could not be making ends meet right now if we weren't able to get groceries from our local food pantry.
I'm still stuck on that $28 a month. That's $7 or less a week. And that certainly doesn't go very far, even for one person. So you mentioned that you serve Schenectady, Albany, Rensselaer, and Saratoga counties. And before we started taping, I was surprised at something you said about Saratoga County. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. A lot of people don't think that there are very many people in need of services in Saratoga County. And in fact, Saratoga County has a lot of poverty and low-wage jobs. In fact, there's a lot of, you know, trailer parks that you know, off the beaten path. And so you don't necessarily see it. And so people don't realize that there is a lot of need in Saratoga County as well. So it's particularly challenging as well in the rural parts of Saratoga and the more mountainous areas as well. People can be really isolated and have real barriers to accessing food.
And then for food, we used to say hungry, and hunger is you don't have immediate food. And then it became food insecurity, that you might have enough food that you're not hungry, but you don't know where the next meal is coming from. And then I recently heard a term, nutritional insecurity. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure, I appreciate that. So yes, nutrition security is something we're striving for, which would mean that all people have access to enough nutritious food for a healthy and productive life. So that's the gold standard. Like, we would like to make sure that everybody has healthy food, culturally appropriate food. That's one of the things when we're relying on charity, and food pantries are charity, you know, we're not a government program. You want to make sure that there's as much dignity as you can provide for people who have opportunity to select a variety, or we call it client choice, where, you know, tuna fish or peanut butter, or in some other communities, you know, it might be having lentils or dried beans or rice, depending on, you know, where the people are from in the community. There's a lot of differences between urban, suburban, rural neighborhoods, even within one town or city. Each pantry gets to know their guests and gets to know, you know, what are the particular food items that we need to have. And that's where I mentioned most of the food comes from the food bank. But there's also a lot of need for items that aren't available at the food bank. So if you're a person who's thinking about doing a food or fun drive this year, we also would really like to encourage people to ask the local food pantry in their own neighborhood, what do they need? Because they might have a family that's gluten-free or other dietary issues, or they might have immigrants from a particular area that really could utilize certain things that aren't available at the food bank. So you can find the food pantries by going to thefoodpantries.org, and we have a map where you can search up the food pantries right in your own neighborhood if you want to ask directly what their specific needs are.
And you had mentioned before we started that you could use financial donations even more effectively than getting the food donations.
Yeah, we definitely want to encourage people to donate dollars. I think a lot of times when people think about a food pantry, they think, I'm going to do a food drive, which is great and useful. But when pantries are using dollars at the food bank, the dollars can go a lot farther than if you were going to go to the grocery store and buy items. And that way, pantries can also buy what they need. There's also a lot of other expenses that pantries have, like delivering food, so paying for fuel and truck costs, as well as heating, you know, supplies, rent, operational costs as well. So pantries do need funding to continue to operate. And the food pantries for the Capital District also needs funding so that we can be there to support our member food pantries. In fact, we're doing something right now called Fill the Truck Fund Drive, where if you think about it, a dollar can provide up to 6.25 pounds of food. And we're just going to say a truck can carry about 10,000 pounds of food. So we're challenging people to raise $1,600 to fill a truck of food. And as I mentioned earlier, we have already delivered 3 million pounds of food this year. So if you're doing okay right now and you're set for the holidays and would like to spread the cheer to people in the community who could really use your help, this is a great time to come together and raise awareness and raise funding in support of the need.
I'm still stuck on how that works out with the culturally appropriate. Can food pantries ask for what they want? How does it work for getting the right kinds of food to the right food pantries?
Pantries are able to order food from the food bank so they can choose what foods they want to order. But if the foods are not available at the food bank, they turn to the regular grocery store like you and I to buy the culturally appropriate or specialized foods that they need. One of the things that we're doing here at the food pantries to help the local food pantries is through our Healthy Pantry Initiative. Next year in 2024, we're going to be launching a financial incentive program to give pantries a little bit of extra funding so that they can stock healthier items and culturally appropriate items that often are more expensive for all of us to stock and most likely will require them to shop at a regular grocery store like everybody else. But we feel like it's really important to provide as much dignity and opportunity as we can through the food pantry system.
I have lots more questions, but we're out of time. This is Bria Barthel again talking with Natasha Pernica, Executive Director of The Food Pantries for the Capital District. They service Schenectady, Albany, Rensselaer, and Saratoga counties. Natasha, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're talking with Avery Stemple, founder and owner-operator of Collar City Mushrooms, an urban mushroom farm, education center, and community gathering space. In recent years, there's been growing interest in everything that fungi can do, especially how they can help us live more sustainably. And today we're discussing how fungi can be used to deal with waste and pollution. Avery, to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about the role that fungi play in decomposition?
Fungi are the great decomposers of the world. Without mushrooms, there wouldn't be soil, and they break down plant and other organic matter and turn them into bioavailable nutrients for the plants that are currently growing. So they continue that cycle of decomposition throughout their lives and all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So how can we utilize those decomposition properties to deal with pollution and other waste?
Sure. There are a variety of fungal strains that break down different components of things that we've manufactured. So there's a strain called Pestiloteopsis microspora, whose common name is the plastic-eating fungi.
Oh.
And it breaks down urethane bonds in specific kinds of plastics and actually then produces an edible fruit body. So if you inoculate, say, a landfill with this type of mycelium, you know, it can break down the plastics, certain kinds of plastics that are in the landfill and reduce their impact on the future.
That is, it's just amazing how many kinds of fungi there are. Like, we know so little about fungi. It's like they're aliens that live on our planet, you know? They can do so many amazing things. So what is being done locally? Are there any municipalities that are harnessing the power of fungi in our waste systems or planning to do so?
Yes, there are. So the town of Bethlehem in Albany County is looking to use mycelium to break down their paper waste and return it more easily into the compost stream. And they have taken some of the shredded paper from their town offices and inoculated it with a mycelium from the mushroom blocks that we've provided. And they're experimenting with strains and evaluating whether it's feasible to create a mycelium stream for composting all of this paper waste.
Right. So it sounds like Collar City Mushrooms is working with municipalities to make this more of a policy, more of a routine way of dealing with municipal waste.
We are, yeah, municipal waste and also long-standing brownfield sites. So we've been in discussion with representatives from the city to use mycelium in order to remediate some of the industrial toxified spaces that exist in the south of the city. So Troy was a huge industrial, you know, city, and the industries shifted, but the waste stayed. And so now there's acres and acres of all of this toxified land that really has sat as a brownfield site. And the EPA just did a phase three evaluation of the waste. And hopefully we get the clearance soon to work with these toxic sites and experiment with the mycelium to see, you know, how deep the extraction process actually works. And we've partnered with Ecovative, the mycelium-based packaging company in Green Island. And they produce tons of mycelium waste. And they've said that we can take their mycelium and help remediate the waste fields in Troy.
So using leftover mycelium as waste, as a waste remediator, that is just so amazing. That is so circular. So it sounds like mushrooms or mycelium or fungi can be used not just to help decompose things, not just to help break down organic or inorganic matter, but also to detoxify polluted sites.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that we started early on was using oyster mycelium to break down cigarette butts. And they can actually decompose the cigarette butts and render them into a compostable material. So wow. Instead of like the asbestos and fibers of the cigarette butts sitting around for 1,000 years, you know, we can feed it to mushrooms and get them to compost it.
So that sounds almost like a Superfund type thing. That sounds almost like some of these very polluted sites that the government has to intervene in and come and clean up. That sounds like potentially something that mycelium could be used in.
Yeah, absolutely. There are mycologists around the world who are experimenting with the impact mycelium can have on a variety of different things. And there's even research going on in Italy, and this was a couple years ago, about a strain of fungi that renders the active compounds in asbestos inert. And so
wow.
If you feed, you know, asbestos to this specific strain of fungi, it then breaks it down and makes it not hazardous anymore. So there's the capacity for fungi to help heal the damages that humans have caused to the environment and to, you know, potentially to each other is absolutely huge.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you think our listeners should know that we haven't covered? Any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
Sure. Yeah, one of the most fantastic sounding applications of mycelium is NASA using radiotrophic strains to grow spacesuits and panels for the space stations, because they literally turn radiation into their fruit bodies.
Wow.
And so they absorb the radiation from, you know, wherever they are. And if we craft the spacesuits that house humans with this mycelium, then it better protects them from the radiation in space.
That is so cool. That is so solar punk. Well, thank you for being here with me today. This was very, very eye-opening.
Cool. Yeah, thank you for interviewing me.
You're welcome.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
from the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Victor Matthew and Matthew Hagg in the New York Times reports that Amtrak train service on the line between New York City and Albany remained disrupted for a second day with structural issues in a parking Manhattan garage halting the trains. Amtrak service between Pennsylvania Station in New York and the Croton Harmon Station in Westchester County was stopped because of problems with the garage. Amtrak says it does not know when the building owner will fix the problems, so it is unknown when normal train service will resume. Metro North trains are still running between Grand Central Terminal and Croton Harmon, and Amtrak tickets are being honored on that line. Read more about this story in the New York Times. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the first local cannabis stores have finally opened after the state legalized the drug more than 2.5 years ago. But the two stores in Hudson are only temporary pop-up shops, operating only until the end of the year. Gotham Dispensary's pop-up store is on Front Street, and Legacy Dispensaries are selling cannabis on Union Street. In October, New York officials opened up licensing for temporary pop-up shops to sell some of the cannabis that has been piling up with few stores officially open. So far, the only other official cannabis stores open nearby are in Albany and Rensselaer County. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Kathleen Moore reports in the Times Union that a Blue Ribbon Commission told the Board of Regents its recommendation on how to change high school graduation requirements on November 13th. The commission wants students to have more ways to graduate from high school besides passing Regents exams. The state has been giving Regents exams for 145 years, but they were not required until the mid-90s, and now all students have to pass 5 Regents exams to graduate. In recent years, students have been allowed to substitute the 5th Regents exam with a career in technical education program or a project in arts or civics. But New York is one of only 7 states in the country requiring passage of similar exams to graduate. The commission recommended no longer requiring specific courses, including algebra, and instead said students should be able to show competency in some STEM topics, which include science, technology, engineering, and math, and that students should be able to graduate early if they show competency. Commission member Segrario Rudescindio O'Neill said, and I quote, "The commission placed a great deal of interest in increasing student flexibility. This would provide students with more opportunities to meet graduation requirements, increase the number of elective courses that may be used to fulfill credit requirements," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, there will be a slight chance of showers between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 45 degrees. On Tuesday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 26 degrees. And on Wednesday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 49 degrees. And on Wednesday night, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 32 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Here's Palinville's Florist from their 2022 album that's called Florist. This is Sci-Fi Silence. Mm-hmm.
the only thing inside I can't follow through the night. You're the only thing I want that I can't find. Whisper every way to the water. It shows me all the ways to be me. And silence, sci-fi silence. I found what it means to be moving on.